Larry Lucchino, May 31, 2017.
Well, when we spoke, believe it or not, in 2008,
was it that long ago?
Yeah, it's right. Amazing. Much of the discussion was about your Italian background and basically your sense of Italian-American identity. What I'd like to do today, if it's okay, is to speak a little bit more about your involvement with baseball.
Sure.
And I assume that when you were at Princeton, I mean, you've had a long and distinguished career in baseball management, but am I right in assuming you didn't set out with that field in mind?
No, I did not. I mean, I grew up in Pittsburgh, which is, of course, the sports crazy town.
Right.
And all I thought about was being a shortstop or a center fielder or a second baseman or something. I didn't think that about anything related to ownership or management.
Right.
And nor did many people from my neighborhood.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So could you say a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, it was quite fortuitous. I was at, right after law school, I went to Yale Law School, and after that, I worked on the Watergate, the impeachment of Richard Nixon,
mm-hmm.
I guess the fairest way to say it. And I did that for about a year, and when Nixon resigned, I took my first job with a law firm in D.C., and the firm was called Weems Connolly in Califano.
Right.
I mentioned the third name because it was important to me at the time and remains important. Edward Bennett Williams was the primary partner.
Right.
And he at that time was the president and part owner of the Redskins.
Mm-hmm.
I went to his firm in order to be a trial lawyer, litigator. It was an outstanding firm with an outstanding reputation, and it was a very selective place to go. When I was offered a position there, I accepted with alacrity, you know, because I would have been happy to fit anywhere under their umbrella of specialties. But while I started out as a general litigator, Williams gave me an assignment to work on a small Red Sox case, which had to be litigated. So I did that, and because of that, I got to know him better and better. And he was an Irishman from the the west side of Hartford, I think it was.
Oh.
So the kind of Irish-Italian compatibility, teasing, joking came naturally to both of us. So, in effect, he was comfortable with me, and I was comfortable with him, and it gradually led to another case and another responsibility. And before long, he asked me to represent the Redskins and to be the general counsel to the Redskins.
Mm-hmm.
A year or two later, he bought the Orioles, and instead of asking for another person to do the baseball, he said, "You can do that. You know, you were an athlete. You can relate to these guys. You do both." So I did the Redskins and the Orioles for many years together. And gradually, he was the sole owner of the Redskins and a partner, actually the sole owner of the Orioles and a partner of the Redskins. So I kind of gravitated more towards baseball, but for about 8 years I did both. And then he asked me to go take his position as president of the team in 1988 after the team got off to an abysmal start. And so he asked me to kind of go up and spend as much time as I needed to, because I was in the law firm was located in Washington.
Right.
But the baseball team was, of course, in Baltimore, and I spent a lot of time in between those two cities. I was a citizen of two cities for a long time. And
Something then about, I mean, obviously one of the things you're remembered for with Baltimore is the building of Camden Yards. You say
yeah, that's
something
a good
about
example.
That?
He gave me that opportunity. He said, okay, I was working for him and I was, when he was the owner of the Orioles, and I had suggested to him that we try to get a baseball-only ballpark instead of a combination ballpark, which were all the rage.
Right.
And I remember him saying to me, why don't you go out and suggest that? You don't want to just build one stadium. You want to build a baseball park and then another football stadium beside it. He said, whatever you mention it to the press, see what they think of it. But whatever you do, don't keep my name out of it. I don't want, they're going to crucify you for that. So I did do that. And surprisingly, the press, the media loved the idea. And that's what we pursued. Notion of the baseball park, and Ed was willing to make his commitment to Baltimore to stay long term, sign a long term lease, because at that point we were signing year to year leases in the old Memorial Stadium.
Mm-hmm. But
his commitment to Baltimore is what gave me the chance to help design and build Camden Yards.
But Camden Yards turned out to be a trendsetter, obviously. It kind of got away from the old cookie-cutter-style ballparks or stadiums.
Exactly. We knew that's what we wanted in a ballpark, and we just didn't know the whole nation would embrace it quite as much as did afterwards.
Hmm. So that was your vision from the start, that this be a specifically just a baseball park. And did you have any other retro stadiums in mind when you went about it?
I did. I grew up in Pittsburgh, as I said, and I saw the change from Forbes Field, which was built in 1909. Fenway Park was built in 1912. I saw those ballparks, and I loved the style, the feel, the tradition, the irregularity of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do that in a baseball park, so those were two. Emmett Field was another one that served as some inspiration for us.
Right.
As we were trying to build a traditional old-fashioned ballpark.
Yep.
With modern amenities.
Well, as a lifelong baseball fan, I thank you for changing that trend, because those ballparks were hideous.
Yeah, they were terrible.
Yeah. Well, then, of course...
There was no generic.
Yeah. Well, then you went to San Diego and did more ballpark work out there.
Yes, I think in part I was... we sold the Orioles in, at the end of the 93 year, and... In 1994, I joined up with a man named John Morris, who was interested in acquiring the Padres. He lived in Rancho. What the hell is it called? No, I'm blanking. He lived in San Diego, let's just say. Was interested in building a ballpark as well, because he had seen the success of Camden Yards, and so that was why. Well, we have an echo in here. I think that was part of the appeal of him for me to see what we'd done in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited me to come out, and I became about a 10.5% owner of the team at that point. Mm-hmm. When I moved to the West Coast.
And, of course, Petco Park is, it's right downtown. I mean, what is the impact of that ballpark relative to, say, Camden Yards?
Camden Yards was a economic revitalization impact on a portion of that town, as it did, I think, the most successful development projects of all the ballparks that have been built, and plenty of them have ancillary development around them.
Right.
But I think that PEPCO and San Diego stand out as the places where public investment and the public expectation for significant ancillary development was most richly obtained.
Right. Well,
we actually talked about the possibility of $500 million of ancillary development around the ballpark. There has been already over $5 billion in ancillary development around that part of the East Village section of downtown San Diego.
Yeah, I've been there. It's quite remarkable what's happened.
Yeah.
Well,
and then we came here and rebuilt Fenway Park. We didn't. We came here. We didn't exactly apply all the lessons we had learned about starting over. We with ballparks, we recognized that we had something of a historic value here, and we spent the next 10 or 12 years improving, preserving, expanding, enhancing Fenway Park.
Oh yeah. Well, I remember you're talking to a lifelong Sox fan from Western Mass.
Okay.
I appreciate. Can you say a little bit about how the move to Boston came about in the first place?
Yes, the team announced that it was for sale. One of my partners in San Diego was a guy named Tom Warner, and he had been the previous owner of the Padres. We bought the team from him, John Morris and I, and he came to me and said, I'm interested in this Red Sox thing. A good friend of mine is working on it. If we get the team, will you come out and join us? And I said, absolutely. And then I proceeded to help form the group that acquired the team.
Okay. So you were a part owner, obviously, of the Sox, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And you're...
Still am.
Yeah, right, of course. Your official title was President and CEO.
Emeritus now.
Right.
Yeah, I was President and CEO through 2015, and
yep.
Then the last year and a half or so, I've been President and CEO Emeritus. In fact, I'm talking to you right now from my office at that point.
Great. What, this is going to be perhaps a silly question, but what stands out in your memory from your years in Boston? Or is that too obvious?
Oh, 2004.
Yeah.
It's obvious. Patel also was the year-to-year renovation and improvement of Fenway Park. It wasn't a single moment. It was an evolution. But enormous satisfaction from preserving it in Fenway Park and making it work again.
Was that an expectation when you went to Boston that you would be saving Fenway, or was that not
well,
yet?
That was a predisposition. There were six groups trying to buy the team. We were the only one predisposed to trying to save Fenway. The others wanted to replace it.
Right, right. I remember that.
But we had to take a little bit of time and take some small steps to ensure that it could be saved and made into the kind of ballpark it needed to be in the 21st century to work for baseball.
Yeah. So 2004, what in particular, what stands out in your mind?
Well, the reaction of the fans after winning it all. In our first press conference in December 21st, 2001, we acquired the team. We were selected as the winners the night before. That morning at the press conference, I recited about three or four obligations of ownership, commitments of ownership. And the last thing I said is not really an obligation of ownership, but I will tell you, number five is that we will eradicate the curse of the Bambino. And people laughed and all of that. And of course, and there are My Joe Namath moment.
The promise, right. When did the evil empire term come into being? Was that...
I brought that to Boston many years of baseball experience and a natural antipathy for the Yankees, which was my good fortune because Boston and the Red Sox had their own natural antipathy towards the Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
And early on, when the Yankees thwarted us in a move we were trying to make, I remember barking out to Murray Chass in the New York Times. This is but another example of the evil empire, the New York Yankees, expanding its tentacles further into the world of baseball. I was lucky because that was a sentiment that resonated with real Red Sox fans.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're talking to one of them, so... You know, even though they had all those Italian ball players when I was a kid, DiMaggio, Barra, Rizzuto, I hated them.
Well, I didn't hate them when I was growing up. I was always searching in the papers and sports pages for Italian-American surnames to guide me or offer me some inspiration or to provide for some sense of identification.
Yeah.
And so I did. I did like... some of those Yankee players when I was a kid, but when I became an adult, I put away the things of a child.
I guess it's a question as to what was sweeter about 2004? Was it the winning the series or coming from 0-3 against the Yankees?
Oh, I mean, it was, of course, winning in the way that we won, coming from 0-3 against the Yankees, juxtaposed against 2003, the year when we lost in the ALCS to the Yankees.
Yeah.
In extra innings. That was a painful home run.
Well, it was a historic moment for New England fans everywhere, really.
Yeah.
Just,
it was really the 1-2 punch of that 2003 year added on. I mean, 2002 was our first full season. 2003, we had a great but heartbreaking finish. And 2004, we won it all. You couldn't have put it together any better if you were constructing a Hollywood script.
Absolutely. How would the 2007 and 2013 years compare?
Well, they were all good. They were all good. You know, it's left. You love all your children. But the 2007 was interesting because we had some challenges in the off season before and had to put things together. And so that was. And we had a slogan that I instituted around here. It was called "Any group of schmeals can win once." So we had to be a group of schmeals that won more than once. And so winning a second time was important to us.
Yeah.
And then 13 was very special too because of the bombing at the Boston Marathon and the role David Ortiz and the whole team played in the whole Boston Strong movement.
Yeah.
And the satisfaction we got at being a force for unification of the community in the face of that kind of ugliness.
Yeah, that was memorable. Well, you now have four World Series rings, right? One from the Orioles and these three.
Right.
You also have a Super Bowl ring from the Redskins, right?
The Redskins, right, yeah.
And you played in the Final Four.
I was a lowly, insignificant sophomore on the Final Four teams that Bill Bradley headlined.
Yeah.
And, but it was it's a great sort of surprise as well.
So, after all of this, what looking back... is there something that's given you the greatest satisfaction with all that you've accomplished?
That's hard to say.
Yeah.
There have been different varieties of ice cream in different places that have all tasted very pleasing, or very pleasing, very pleasant. I think the a couple of things. Certainly waiting here in Boston is right at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
As hard as that was for 6 years. preserving great ballparks is right at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the satisfaction of using our baseball teams for charitable and philanthropic activities is enormously satisfying.
Yeah.
In retrospect, and the relationship between the Jimmy Fund and the Red Sox only got deeper and stronger when we were here. We created a foundation for the Padres. We created an Orioles foundation in Baltimore. And so that that opportunity comes with baseball and baseball teams was an immense source of satisfaction.
And now you're the chairman of the Jimmy Fund, right?
Yeah, I am.
You know, I've been giving to the Jimmy Fund since I was a little kid in the days when you'd go to the movies and there were double features, and between the features, Ted Williams would appear on the screen and make a pitch for the Jimmy Fund.
That's so great, That's what I like about the cause is so worthy, but but its history makes it sort of the charity of the people of Boston and Massachusetts and more and more all of New England.
Yeah. Well, and now you're working on a new ballpark, right?
Trying to get a ballpark done in Rhode Island for the Pawtucket Red Sox.
Right.
And but it's you know, it's a serious and unpredictable enterprise.
Yeah. Well. Anything else that I haven't asked?
That gives me, I'm a little tired of talking about myself, right?
Oh, well.
So I'm very happy to stop. But if you have any specific questions, don't hesitate to call me back. I'll be happy to answer that and make sure that you've got it all right.
Terrific. Listen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time. And
You're the one doing God's work.
Oh, yeah, I wish.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. You take care.